Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Washington, D.C., and was an All-American basketball player at Syracuse. He played 12 years in the NBA and was elected to the Basketball Hall of Fame in 1990. He then built a $300 million auto supplier over 29 years and then served as mayor of Detroit from 2009 through 2013. Today, he's the founder and president of Bing Youth Institute. His name, Dave Bing. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. And our guest this week is the former mayor of Detroit from 2009 through 2013, Dave Bing. Mayor, welcome. An honor to have you back.
Well, thank you, Jack. It's been a while. Good to see you again, and I hope you had a great holiday.
The same. Let's start by talking about your childhood in Washington, D.C., your mom and your dad.
My mom and dad both are from South Carolina. My mom's from Columbia, South Carolina. My dad is from a very, very small town in South Carolina. And they met as youngsters, got married, and didn't want to stay in the South. So they moved to Washington, D.C., and had their family, raised their family there. I'm the second oldest. I have an older sister. I have a brother and then a younger sister.
At age five, something happened to you, please.
Yes, I was playing. You know, we didn't have toys. We were a very poor family, so we had makeshift toys. And I nailed two sticks together. And as 5 year older, you know, I was supposedly that was my horse to run around the neighborhood with. But in making this horse, I didn't nail the nail all the way down, so it protruded out, and I tripped over a sidewalk, and the nail hit me in my left eye. And because we were poor, I couldn't get to the hospital. We didn't have insurance, and my dad said, we're going to let it heal. So I never had an operation, and from the age of five, even up to where I am today, I still have a very blurred vision in that eye.
How good would you have been if you had two good eyes?
You know, playing basketball, I do think it impacted me in a negative way because my peripheral vision wasn't that really good. Depth perception wasn't really that good. And, you know, when you're shooting shots out on the floor or either you're shooting free throws, you know, you want to have good vision, and I just learned to overcome that, and yep, I played my entire career with blurred vision in my left eye.
A man named Ernie Davis was instrumental in convincing you to go to Syracuse. Tell us about Ernie Davis.
Syracuse was one of the last schools I visited as a senior in high school, and Ernie Davis had just won the Heisman Trophy, the first African-American to win the Heisman Trophy. And the guys that took me around at Syracuse the weekend that I was there was Ernie Davis and John Mackey, who was one of the greatest tight ends to ever play. And they convinced me to go to Syracuse because the basketball team was horrendous. They had lost 27 games in a row over the two-year period and said, you know, we think you are talented enough to help turn this program around. Basketball is not the sport here in Syracuse. It's football. But we think you can make a difference. And so I chose to go to Syracuse, and Ernie was very influential in my choice.
You were the first consensus All-American basketball player at Syracuse in 39 years. And for 3 years, you had a special roommate.
My roommate in college is now the coach at Syracuse, Jimmy Boeheim. Jimmy and I were freshmen together. Jimmy did not have a scholarship when he came to school as a freshman because there were no scholarships available. All seven scholarships had already been awarded to other guys. So Jimmy was a walk-on in his freshman year. In our sophomore year, we started to room together in my junior year. And then Jimmy was a starter with me our senior year in the backcourt. So we came to Syracuse in 1962, and Jimmy has never left. He has been an unbelievable. He's had just unbelievable success at the university. He's the second all-time winningest coach in the history of the NCAA. And he's still coaching, and this is a tough year for him, so I'm not sure whether or not what the longevity looks like. At some point in time, he's going to have to retire.
Arguably, you guys are the only two college roommates to ever be in the same Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's a trivia question, I guess, now. Jimmy and I inducted him into the Hall of Fame several years ago, and so I went in as a player. Jimmy has gone in as a coach. And our relationship is pretty special because when we met, you know, we just came from two different backgrounds. I'm a black kid from a city in D.C., Jimmy, a white kid from a little small town up in near Syracuse, Rochester, New York. And, you know, we, in rooming together, we didn't have much in common. So we got to talk a lot about a lot of different things. And I think that's what cemented our relationship. It's about people. It wasn't about black and white. It wasn't about somebody poor, rich. It wasn't about somebody from a small city or a big city. We got to know each other as people and respected each other. And, you know, that's what kept us together today.
Your senior year, the New York Knicks have the first pick. Everybody says they're going to take Dave Bing. You're going to play at the Garden. You're going to get rich and famous. What happened?
Well, I got drafted by Detroit, so I didn't get rich, that's for sure. I thought for sure I was going to the Knicks because, you know, Kazzy was the number one player in college. I was the number two player. And everybody felt that, you know, with Kazzy in Ann Arbor, he would go to Detroit. And with me playing in New York, that I would go to the Knicks, everybody felt that was the right thing to happen. But it didn't happen that way. Dave DeBuscher was the coach at that time, and we weren't so sophisticated in the NBA. The way they chose the number one draft choice, they flipped a coin. And they flipped a coin, and Dave called the wrong side of the coin, and therefore the Knicks had the first draft choice, the Pistons were second. So the Knicks took Kazzy, and the Pistons took me.
And offered you $15K, and the rest is history.
$15K, and the rest is history. That's, you know, when you look at the league today, and you see that the minimum wage, the minimum, or the average wage, is about $3.4 million. You know, I often looked at my mother and my father and said, if only you had waited. I'd be doing something different today, I'm sure.
We're talking to Dave Bing, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Dave Bing, who played in the NBA for 12 years, most of them with the Pistons, made the NBA's 50th anniversary all-time team. Tell us about the first game you ever played in the NBA.
Well, the first game I played was against the Cincinnati Royals with Oscar Robertson. And, you know, I had seen Oscar as a high school and collegiate player and just thought he was the best thing that I'd ever seen. He had all the skills. I mean, he could do everything. And, you know, playing against him in my first game, I was in awe. And I didn't know what to do. I wound up for the first time in my life being scoreless. I went 0 for 6. And, you know, Oscar came to me after the game and said, you know, I've seen you play. I've heard about you. Don't let this one get you down. You're going to be a great player. And we happened to play our second game against Cincinnati here in the city of Detroit at Cobo. And I got 35 that game. And so he came up to me and said, you listen to me. You believe me. And I'll tell you, you're going to have a great career.
In 1990, when you went into the Basketball Hall of Fame, he introduced you. And he said, quote, Dave is the perfect example of professionalism, class, dignity, and humanity. He cares. He gets involved with the world. He didn't say this, but he gets very involved with Detroit. So, one other person that you played against, Bill Russell.
Bill Russell was obviously, he wasn't the most dominant player in his era. He was the winningest player in his era, but I think the most dominant player was Wilt Chamberlain. But Wilt couldn't beat Russ. I mean, Russell will tell you, I got 10 fingers and I've got 11 championship rings. I don't have enough fingers for all my championship rings. So the game of basketball is team. It's not an individual sport. And Russell was the epitome of a team player. You know, the Celtics were a great franchise, a great team. And, you know, I played against Russ for my first 3 or 4 years in the league. And I'll never forget, in my second year, we played the Celtics in a playoff. And we were at Cobo. And, you know, I had a tough first half. I think I had like 7 points in the first half. And Russell said to me, you know, I know that you're going to be looking to score in the second half. I got 37 in the second half. And he came up to me after 2 or 3 shots I made in a row and told me, the lane is my home. Don't come down here because I'm going to block every shot that you throw up. So, you know, he had an uncanny ability to psych you. I mean, he played word games with you. I mean, he's a very smart guy. And I was smart enough to believe him. I didn't go back in the lane. I just shot jump shots. And that was one of those nights that I couldn't miss. But Russ was a consummate pro and a really good person, and we are still good friends today.
Sport Magazine once dubbed Dave Bing Mr. Unsung About. Dave, when did you know you wanted to have your own business, and how did you prepare yourself?
Well, I think it went back to college, really. I think I realized once I got to Syracuse that I had the ability to go at the next level. Syracuse afforded me a very good education, and when I got into the league, I was very knowledgeable about, you know, you can't play this game forever. At some point in time, whether it's injury, whether it's age, whether your talents cease to exist or whatever, you're not going to play forever. And I prepared myself by doing by reading, by studying. I wanted to be a business person way back then, but I knew I wasn't ready. And even when I retired from the league, I knew I still wasn't ready, so I had to get some training. And I did that for a 2-year period. But there was nothing more exciting for me than owning and running my own business. And I did that for 29 years. And I think that probably was the highlight for me, running my, you know, starting my own business, developing my own business, running my own business, growing my own business. We went from a startup company with 4 people to a company over 1,300 employees, gross sales in our first year from about $2 million to over $300 million at the end of it. So that was exciting to me, and it took the place of basketball.
29-year career, the Bing Group. What's the biggest thing you learned in those 29 years?
How important people are. You know, and I think basketball actually prepared me for that, because as a team sport, I don't care how good you are as an individual. You're not going to win as an individual. You win as a team. And I tried to transfer a lot of the things that I learned from sports into business. I knew that I had a certain skill, I had a certain intellect, but I also knew I couldn't do everything. And I wanted to surround myself with really good people, people that were even smarter or more capable than me. So that happened, and that's how the company grew. But if you don't have good people, it's very, very tough to have success.
August of 1999, an arson fire leveled Bing Manufacturing, a 60,000-square-foot parts plant at Oakland and Kniff. 4 or 5 months later, another fire. How did you survive those?
Once again, it was, you know, it would have been easy to quit and you know, and say that bad luck, I don't want to do this anymore. But when I looked at the people that were employed by the company, a lot of them were people that I had grown to get pretty close to. A lot of people who couldn't get jobs anywhere else. And if we were to quit and close the doors, then all of those people and those families would be hurting. So I decided, no, I'm going to fight this through. And we wound up rebuilding a plant. And all of those people, I mean, they were out for a few weeks because I had to rent some space in another facility in the city of Detroit so that we could keep our production going. But I decided that I'm going to make another investment. I'm going to rebuild, build a brand new plant. I want to keep all of these people employed. And we did that, and we persevered. We got very good support from our customers, the traditional big three, and we came out of it a stronger company.
You not only cared about the people, you cared about the community. Talk to us about you and Bob Thompson.
Bob Thompson, and this was going back in the Kilpatrick administration, where Bob wanted to invest $200 million into the education of kids here in the city of Detroit. And there was a disagreement between the Kilpatrick administration and Bob because they wanted Bob's money, but they didn't want him to have any input into how the money was going to be invested or spent. So Bob pulled out. And I said, this is crazy. Here's a guy who wants to invest in the future of our city, the children in the city. For $200 million, I'm going to call Bob and see whether or not I can help him to change his mind and invest in the city of Detroit, the children here. And Bob and I got together, and Bob changed his mind. He did invest his money. He didn't do it in the DPS system, but he started his own charter school system. And now I think Bob has about 7 or 8 different facilities here in the city of Detroit. He's an outstanding man. He's a guy that doesn't look for accolades for himself. He cares. His wife Ellen cares. They've done an outstanding job, and I'm so thankful that he made the decision to invest here in the city.
We're talking to Mayor Dave Bing. When we come back, we'll ask him how it was he decided to run for mayor. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Dave Bing. Dave, October 16th, 2008. You had no gray hair. Okay. You announce you're going to run to be mayor of Detroit. Why?
Because I cared. Detroit was going through a horrendous time, and the Kilpatrick administration was imploding. There was a lot of unsavory things going on, and some criminal activity that was going on, and nobody trusted City Hall. And so a lot of my friends in the business community in particular said, you know, we need somebody to go in there that we know, somebody that we trust, somebody we can work with, and we think you're the right guy. And it took me a while for that to settle in because I'd never been in politics. I'd been around politics going all the way back to Coleman Young, but I've never served in any capacity whatsoever. And, you know, as I made the decision to retire from my company, I wasn't looking for another job, especially a job as hard as being the mayor of the city of Detroit, because that probably was the worst time in the city's history over the last 40 or 50 years. Bottom line, I made the decision to go in and see what I could do to help. And it was a tough 4.5 years for me. But I do think if I had to do it over again, I think I'd do the same thing because I do think we made a difference. The city started to turn around under the Bing administration.
You mentioned the first thing you had to do was regain the trust, the integrity. How did you do that?
One of the good things, having been here for so long, I knew a lot of people, and I had gained trust from a lot of those folks just by the way I carried myself. And when I got in there, what was difficult is, you know, once again, it's about people. And, you know, everybody had lambasted the workers in the city of Detroit of being crooks, being lazy. And I guess I bought into a lot of that until I got into that office, and I realized that some of that was true. But I would say easily 80 or 90% of the people that I got to know worked hard for the city of Detroit. There were some people that had to leave the administration, and that was a tough thing for me, but it had to happen. So I started to clean house, quite frankly. You figured out those people who weren't doing the right thing, those people who were taking advantage of the taxpayers. There was no place for them in the administration. So it took me some time, a year, year and a half, to really go through all of the personnel changes that I had to make. But I think because I guess my work ethic is something that's pretty strong. You know, I believe in earning my way, and I believe in leading by example. And so I did that. And so all of a sudden, people saw me coming to work early, staying late, doing all of the things from a preparation standpoint, working with people very well. And all of a sudden, folks started to change. People started to do what they were supposed to do, and things changed in a positive way.
There was an article in the Free Press dated December 12th, 2013, where they listed your top 10 achievements. And one was cutting the payroll from 14,000 to 9,200.
That was very difficult for me because, number one, I knew the decisions that I had to make were going to negatively impact the livelihood of a lot of people. But we couldn't afford 14,000 people. We didn't have the revenue to be able to carry that many people on our payroll. Had I continued to do that, we would have gone bankrupt much sooner. We cut, just because of benefits and pay, we cut about $300 million out of our cost structure. I was really worried when I came in that the worst thing that could happen would be to miss a payday. And so we had to really religiously look at our cash flow on a day-to-day basis to make sure that we didn't miss a payday, because had that happened, I'm not so sure that there wouldn't have been some really disruption here in the city of Detroit. So for 4.5 years, that was a big concern of mine. It never came to a reality, and I think my staff should get a lot of credit for that.
The bankruptcy. What amazed you, Dave Bing, the most about that bankruptcy process?
I think Kevin Orr was a very good selection. Contrary to what many people may believe, Kevin and I got along pretty well. He was a consummate professional, very smart guy. But what he did, he was able to do something that I couldn't do. He had an independence that I didn't have. Because coming in as emergency manager, he didn't have to worry about city council getting approval by city council. He didn't have to worry about the unions and the positions that they took. He could do what he wanted to as long as he had the backing from the governor in Lansing, which he had. But a lot of the things that he did were plans that we had already put in place. Kevin and then Mike Duggan. I got a lot of data from my administration relative to what the problems were and what some of the solutions were. And I would tell you, if it were not for us, I mean, when I went into office, we were bankrupt. We just hadn't filed for bankruptcy. We still had $18 billion in long-term liabilities and debt. We still had over $300 million on an annual deficit. And, you know, you just couldn't cut your way through prosperity. And that's all I could do. I couldn't raise any revenue. And so I had to really deal with the revenue that I had. But I think the thing that surprised me in the bankruptcy was what Judge Rhodes Judge Rosen did. They were able to go out and get commitments and raise almost $1 billion to protect the pensioners and to protect the DIA. I don't think anybody ever dreamed of that. You know, Kevin did his job. He had a whole bunch of folks that helped him out. But if it wasn't for Judge Rhodes and Judge Rosen, I'm not sure that we would have come out of bankruptcy as quick as we did and in as good a position as we did.
Dave Bing, you attended hundreds of meetings with people who were cussing you, threatening you, crying, showing every emotion under the sun. How did you do it?
Well, it bothered me, I have to tell you the truth, because, you know, when I went into that office, you know, I had a good reputation in the city of Detroit. You know, I was doing a lot of good things. But nobody can realize how bad the situation was. And one of the things I used to say all the time, if you haven't been in city government, if you wasn't there when we were there, you had no idea how bad things were. You know, I came in 2009, and the first thing I saw was my financial statement that said we were in a financial crisis. I said that in 2009, and it, you know, even though we're out of bankruptcy today, we still got a financial crisis. Most people would think, okay, things have turned around. No, things are moving in the right direction, but it hasn't turned around. A lot of people got hurt because hard decisions that should have been made years and years ago were not made. And on my term, I had to make those hard decisions, which turned a lot of people against me. But I couldn't take it personally. I had to say, this has to be done. Otherwise, we'll never get out of this.
We're talking to Dave Bing. When we come back, we'll ask him about his newest chapter in his glorious life. And I'm Jack Grisula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Grisula. This is Anything is Possible, and we're talking to former Mayor Dave Bing. Dave, newest chapter, you are the founder and president of Bing Youth Institute. What is it?
Bing Youth Institute is an organization that I put together as I was ready to leave office, because one of the things that I saw as impediment to the city of Detroit, to southeastern Michigan, and to the country as a whole is our youth not paying attention and supporting our youth. Education was very important in the success that I had in life. And, you know, over the years that I've been in Detroit, and specifically when I was in the mayor's office, I ran into a lot of young people who had lost hope. You know, the family has a total breakdown in this country. Over 50% of households, there's not a man. And it's very hard, if not almost impossible, for a lot of our young men without a man around to become a man. And so I said, you know, one of the things I want to do is to go back and help. I want to lend a helping hand, because there were so many people that influenced and helped me in life. So we started a program in the Detroit public school system where we wanted 7th, 8th, and 9th graders. We wanted young kids before they had made up their minds what they wanted to be or what they wanted to do. And so, you know, can we have a positive impact on the lives of these young men? So we now have 60 young men from four different schools in the city of Detroit, two high schools, two middle schools. But the thing that was missing is that we had no mentors. Most of these kids come from a tough background where there may not be a man in the home, may not be a man in their life. And I thought the key thing in my life, my dad was around. But a lot of kids, I had been a big brother here for about four little brothers. I knew that I made a difference in their lives, and I felt that I could do that by bringing men of color in particular into the fold for one-on-one mentoring. So we've been able to do that. To date, we have about 51, 52 men who have committed to mentor these 60 young boys. And I think that's going to make a significant difference in their lives and what they can hope for. We want to grow the program, but we want to do it over time. So it's a challenge, but it's an opportunity to make a major difference in the lives of young people.
If you want to learn more, www.bingyouthinstitute.org. The 60 young men, who are they and how were they chosen?
They were chosen by DPS, by the principals of the schools that they were in. Jack Martin was my CFO in the administration, and he is now the emergency manager for DPS. I called Jack and said, I want to help you. I want to help some of these kids. I don't know any of these kids, but I'd like for you to pick the kids from four schools that that we can help and put into this program. We've done that. What I've been able to do is identify a lot of African-American, and shortly we'll be getting Latino males involved in this also. But I wanted these kids to see that there were black men who cared about them, number one. And number two, there were black men who were not professional athletes or who were entertainers that were doing a lot of good things. So I contacted a lot of my friends in the business arena and asked them to make this commitment to help me save the lives of a lot of these kids. And a lot of them have come to the table. I'm very honored and I'm pleased that so many of them have come out to help. It's a year commitment. It's a lot of time commitment. We're not asking them for money. I'm going now trying to raise money through foundations and some of the businesses here in the city, and they've been very supportive. They think this is the right thing to do, this is the right time to do it, and we are going to make a difference.
www.bingyouthinstitute.org. You've gotten the four sports teams to help you. If there's a black man listening that says, why should I get involved, and will this change me? Dave Bing, what do you say to that person?
It'll have a significant change on you as a man if you are conscious of who you are and how important these young boys are. There are men out here that are doing a lot of good things. There's just not enough of us. Too many of us are worried about our own individual success. And if we don't make a difference in the lives of these young people that are coming up behind us, this city will never come back. This state will never come back. This country will never come back. Because once again, we've got more boys of color in prison than we do in college. That has to change. And if we don't get black men to come to the table and say, I'm going to make a difference in the lives of these boys, it'll never happen. The change won't happen. So I encourage men of color to come to the table at this point in time, because every time that I would go out to a school, I would see the biggest support group would have been white women. The second largest support group would have been white men, the third black women, and there were not many black men around. So I said, you know, it's our time to stand up. We've got to make a difference, because these kids need to see people who look like them, who's successful, who would take them under their arms and make sure that you translate your success to them.
Rudyard Kipling has a very famous poem, If. A little bit of it. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you. If you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too. If you can wait and not be tired by waiting, or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good nor talk too wise. Dave Bing, he wrote about your life when he wrote this poem, If. Fame is not important to you. The glitz, not important to you. Why not?
You know, I came from meager beginnings, and my parents were very wise. Neither one of them graduated from high school, but they were two of the smartest people about life that I've ever been around. They always told me all the way back in the high school, you know, don't let success, don't let fame, don't let wealth go to your head, because it's fleeting. You can be rich one day and broke the next day. You can be famous one day and be a bum the next day. What you've got to do is make sure you don't get your heads up in the clouds. Keep your feet on the ground. Be a common person and always try to reach back and help others. And so I've always done that. My father passed several years ago, but I've never forgotten a lot of the lessons, a lot of the conversations that we had. My mom, bless her, is now 91 years old, and she still lets me know when I'm doing something wrong or something she doesn't like. And I don't want to disappoint her, and so I try to make sure I remember the lessons that they taught me as a youngster.
Describe to us Detroit in 2020.
Detroit is going to make a tremendous comeback. I think by 2020, the downtown, midtown neighborhoods will will be bustling. I also think everybody now understands in order for the city to come back, you've got to pay much more attention to the neighborhoods where so many people still live, so many people who stayed here and never left. And they want to see some of the same kind of investment, some of the same kind of attention in our neighborhoods. I think that's going to happen. The conversations are starting to happen. People are stopped leaving. And people are starting to come back. So in 2020, I would suggest we'll be back up into the 700, 750,000 population. We'll be a much better city. We'll be financially stable at that point in time. But you're still, beyond 2020, it's still another 5 or 10 years before we can look back and say Detroit has really made a turnaround.
Time after time, you've been a pathfinder. The first. You went to Syracuse, great athlete, but you didn't play football, you played basketball. You come here with the Pistons. You build this automotive supplier. You become mayor, now this Bing Youth Initiative. Where do you get the courage to do this over and over?
Well, I have faith. I mean, you know, I came up in a Christian family, and if you have faith, anything is possible. And even though I've had success at all the stops in my life, I'm not done. And I think when everything is said and done, what I'm doing now is going to truly make me feel good. And I know I'll make a difference in the lives of a lot of young men. So I'm just thankful for the opportunity that I've had here in the city of Detroit. And this is my way of letting them know how much I appreciate them.
As our time winds down, what advice to our young listeners this evening?
Don't give up hope. Success is fleeting, but you've got to make sure you build your life on a strong foundation. And I would suggest that foundation starts with school. It's about education. Education gives you the opportunity to meet a lot of different people in life, and you'll learn so much from other people. And everything is not about book learning. It's about people, understanding how to relate, communicate, and get along with people. So don't give up hope. Things may be tough, but, good things are in the offing.
I would add one more thing to any young listener. Read the life of Dave Bing, study his life, and do what he does every day. And you're going to do terrific. And get to heaven someday.
I sure hope so.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.